Morning, everybody. Thrilled to be here, and I'm thrilled to see so many people here on the last day early in the morning. Thank you. So today I'm going to be talking about Medicare's new hospital readmission reduction program, just so I can get a sense. How many people here are familiar with this new provision? About a quarter of us? Okay. So this has been a controversial program since its inception, and I'm going to address one of the sort of major concerns that's been raised. So I'd like to take you through this and see what you think. So I have no disclosures. So as a bit of brief background, I'll refer to the program as HRRP, the Readmissions Reduction Program. It was introduced under the Affordable Care Act, implemented in fiscal year 2013, so it's going into its third year now. How the program works is that hospitals are penalized for what are called excessive readmissions. And this means, I'll walk through this, but if a hospital has more readmissions than would be expected given sort of the national average hospital performance, given a specific hospital's patient population. The penalty, according to your point of view, is substantial, sizable, about $400 million in fiscal year 2014, projected to be around the same this year. However, because of sort of the controversial nature of the program, there have been some prescribed changes to the program. The National Quality Forum, which initially endorsed the readmissions measure that's used under HRRP, has actually been re-examining the issue. And they're changing some of the technical aspects of the program. And there's also some legislation, the Impact Act, which has changed how the program will be performed going forward. So sort of stepping back and thinking about why this program was introduced originally, the HRRP was introduced to address a quality measure, which were readmissions. However, since the inception, as I said, it's been controversial. Critics claim that the notion that the program will improve care is actually quite difficult to do. But that was the original idea, that hospitals can do better discharge planning, better transitional care, and they can reduce the number of people coming back to the hospital quickly after discharge. From a societal and sort of public policy perspective, this would be a good idea to sort of reduce the utilization we've seen, to bend the cost curve, as we discussed when ACA was being implemented. And the notion was sort of based on some influential work by several scholars, including Stephen Jenks, who had a big paper back in 2005 showing geographic variation in readmission rates, and then some of the transitional care work, some randomized controlled trials that showed that you could actually move the needle a little bit when it came to readmissions. And then MedPAC, sort of the Policy Advisory Committee of Medicare, had a big report back in June of 07 showing that, there are a lot of ways that were underperforming and we could save Medicare a lot of money and also improve patient outcomes. As I say, the program's been criticized since its inception. So here's a rundown of some of the big ones. First, there are poor quality measure readmissions. Why? When we do predictive modeling for other sorts of outcomes, like inpatient mortality, we can get pretty good discrimination between those who end up dying within the hospital and those who don't. With readmissions, we're unable to do that successfully. Pretty poor C-scores, as they're called. Hospitals have claimed, and hospital advocates, that the drivers of readmissions tend to be things that hospitals and clinicians don't really have a lot of control over. So those would be things like psychosocial factors, health behaviors, and conditions within the community that, the quality of primary care, the quality of nursing home care, the number of providers in an area, social support, transportation, et cetera. Some of the other problems are some of the very technical details of the policy. So the risk adjustment methodology, as always with risk adjustments, difficult to do a fair apples-to-apples comparison. And with claims data, it's aggravated by the fact that we don't have a lot of psychosocial factors or factors having to do with what's going on in the community. So we end up with what some hospitals claim is a pretty unfair, unbalanced way of looking at hospital performance. And then the fourth one is really interesting. You have people saying both that the penalty is too high and the penalty is too low. So it's not enough to move the needle, to make people invest in moving the needle on readmissions, or it's way too high, which is going to discourage certain hospitals from addressing the issue at all. And so those hospitals that get penalized will sort of get trapped in a death spiral. They'll get penalized, they'll have less money to invest in prevention ad nauseum. So today, I'd like to ask a few additional questions which I think are interesting, since those have been fought over quite a bit already, which is, not is just the penalty too high or too low, but what does that mean? Is the penalty too high to actually incentivize prevention efforts? And to actually walk through some numbers on that. Our hospitals who are traditionally penalized the most in the first few years of the program, those that are actually penalized in a broader sense when you account for some of the other ways that Medicare pays those hospitals, and I'll explain, that was a little vague, and I'll explain what I mean by that in a moment. Can hospitals expect to move the needle when it comes to readmissions? Is it actually possible to make material differences in how much, how high your readmission rate is? And finally, how much revenue is actually at stake if you do move the needle? So this is sort of the founding document of the readmissions movement, the Stephen Jenks article in 2005, which just basically shows a lot of geographic variation in the readmission rate. And you can have a lot of takeaways from this, but depending on your sort of priors. So you could look at this and say, okay, the national readmission rate average is 20%. This 2005, 65 and older fee-for-service beneficiaries. One thing you could say is, wow, there's a lot of variation. That means there's differential performance. So we should definitely have some sort of measure to address this, which is what we did. Or you could look at it and say, well, wait a minute, some of the states that are darker and have the highest readmission rates tend to be those with, again, based on your priors, perhaps poor quality care. You have some hospitals in the South which have been singled out in some prior research by Harvard researchers that tend to have poor performance and attract penalties on other sorts of performance programs, quality assessments. Or you could say these are also areas with more diverse populations where some of those factors I was talking about before, community factors, might be different than in other areas. An influential paper that came out recently in NEJM by some of the same Harvard researchers showed that if you start to account for some of these societal factors, contextual factors, like the proportion of hospital patients that are on SSI, you start to see a pattern here. So this chart is a little hard to read and you have to sort of turn your head around, but what it basically shows is that as you increase the proportion of beneficiaries treated at a hospital who are low income, you have an increasing, well, actually here you have a decreasing number of hospitals that are not penalized under this HRRP program. That was a mouthful, but basically, let's go to the next one, you'll see more clearly. As you increase again the number of low income patients, that's the x-axis, the amount of the penalty amongst those who are penalized increases. So it's two ways of looking at the same thing. So this sort of verifies the critique, which is the way we're going about things now isn't fair. Hospitals treating a greater proportion of low-income patients are doing poorly under the program. They're both being penalized more frequently, and amongst those who are being penalized, they're being penalized more. Okay, so at the risk of boring you to tears, I have to go through this, otherwise you're not going to understand what I'm doing. Here's some of the technical aspects of how it works. These are 30-day unplanned readmissions. A hospital's performance is predicted based on a hierarchical generalized linear model, a logistic model essentially, and that's compared to expected spending. So it's basically your own performance with your own patient mix compared to how the average national performance expected given your patient population mix. These are 3 years of pooled data, which is very important actually, because moving the needle means it takes 3 years for your performance improvement to cycle through. So each year that you improve your performance, you only get credit for a third of it. Started out with three conditions, up to five applicable conditions this year, including knee and hip replacement. The penalty is maxed. It started out at 1% of Medicare reimbursements per discharge. It's up to 3% in FY15 going forward. So that could be a substantial amount. You see some decrease in the national average rates of readmissions over the years, but that may have something to do with the fact that there are more exclusions in terms of planned readmissions. So these are unplanned readmissions that are measured. So how does Medicare reimbursement work? You have a base operating payment. That's adjusted for case mix, patient severity. But then there are additional policy adjustments, which I'm sure you've heard of, these DSH payments for the proportion of low-income patients that you serve and low-income Medicare patients that you serve. as well as IME payments for the resident training that you're doing. So the way HRFP works is it penalizes your base operating payment, but none of these policy adjustments. It does not affect your DSH payments. It does not affect your teacher training payments. And that's sort of the nub of the issue here. So visually, if you look on top here, you see the excessive readmission penalty ratio is applied to this part up above, which is the base operating payment, but it's not addressing these policy adjustments, the IME, DSH, and uncompensated care payments. So the research question is, okay, what if you account for the fact that some of the hospitals that treat these low-income patients that are most often penalized under HRP, they actually get these pretty substantial, hefty policy adjustment payments which are not penalized under HRP. So that's the question. So we use some Medicare impact file data, which looks at 3 years of pooled Medicare readmissions data, about 3,000 hospitals, and a few models are run, which I'll get to. The first set of results, this basically shows, if you look in the left-hand column in blue, depending on the hospital type, it doesn't really matter. Actually, you see that not that many hospitals are penalized at the max. So the cap is, you know, up to 3% penalty, but very few hospitals actually get that, about 2% on average. You do see some differences in terms of hospitals that are not penalized. So if you look down at the bottom of safety net hospitals, you see safety net hospitals, about 88% are penalized, and non-safety net hospitals, only about 80% are penalized. So you can start to see this argument in the data that hospitals treating poorer patients tend to be penalized more often. In the green column, you can see the same thing. Again, looking at safety net hospitals, the average penalty is the share of operating payments. It's a little higher for safety net hospitals. It's a little higher for hospitals receiving DSH payments, et cetera. However, in the orange column, once you account for these policy add-on payments, the IME and DSH payments, you see that things are flipped. Safety net hospitals are now actually penalized less as a proportion of their total payments compared to non-safety net hospitals. So this first model basically shows that hospitals that treat poor patients tend to be penalized more than other hospitals. So if you look in blue, bigger hospitals, so your urban hospitals which treat poorer patients, 7 percentage points more likely to be have a high penalty compared to other hospitals, to small hospitals. Safety net hospitals down there on the bottom on the left, 6 percentage points more likely than non-safety net hospitals to be to receive a high penalty. So this confirms what critics have been saying. These penalties are mostly applied to certain types of hospitals, and that might not be fair given the fact that the risk adjustment isn't properly addressing the differences in the patient populations. However, the way we looked at it was if you account for these policy adjustment payments, the additional payments that DSH hospitals, that teaching hospitals and safety net hospitals receive, you actually see something very different here. It's the exact opposite relationship. And that is that larger hospitals suddenly have a lower likelihood of receiving a high penalty share. And your safety net hospitals have a lower likelihood of receiving a high penalty share. So to summarize, the average HRFP penalty is about $28 per discharge. It's applied to all Medicare discharges throughout the year. These policy adjustment payments, the IME, DSH, and uncompensated care payments, which were created under the ACA, average about $1,000. And for safety net hospitals, about $2,700. So you can see that the policy adjustment payments average about 19% of the base operating payment versus about 0.5% for the penalty. So sort of putting things into context, you can see that your larger hospitals, yes, they have about an 18% increase relative to small hospitals in the penalty risk. And safety net hospitals also have an increased risk, but the risk of high penalty share actually is the opposite direction. There's lower risk for those very hospitals. So there's some limitations, but I want to now quickly, I'm probably way out of time, but I want to quickly shift to, okay, what does this all mean? So if you're talking about getting hospitals to invest in prevention, you have to think, how much is the penalty? How much can they move the needle? How much revenue will they, penalty will they avoid? How much revenue will they lose from avoiding readmissions? And what's the cost of an intervention? So I'm just going to show you a few back of the envelope calculations, but the average penalty in 2015 was about $160,000. The average improvement for the top performing hospitals in the top quartile was a change in what's called the adjustment factor, which is the predicted over expected amount of about 0.0005. which translates to about a $7,500 penalty reduction. So it's not a lot. But a 1% decrease in readmissions would translate for a hospital starting at a 30% readmission rate to about more than $20,000 penalty savings. So I leave it to you to say, you know, is that a big deal or not? I mean, it means that if you go down by 1% or up by 1%, you move the needle by about $20,000, which, depending on how you look at it, is a big deal, because I'm not going to walk you through these numbers, but if you want to look at the slides later, that would be meaning, so if you go down to the very bottom, if you move your readmission rate from 24% to 23.9%, that's a $22,000 shift. That amounts to about a difference of one readmission for a hospital with 3,000 Medicare bills and 300 applicable initial discharges for the specific conditions that are measured under this program. So is it fair that if you go down one readmission or up one readmission, you move the needle $20,000? That's sort of the question. And then you can think about, well, if you avoid a readmission, you also lose the $5,000 that you would have been paid, plus the $2,000 if you're a safety net hospital. You can also think about the net margin on those. We don't know that much about the cost of intervention, but if Mathematica a few years back estimated it's about $200 to $300 per discharge, they estimated you can move the needle about 0.8% reduce your readmission rate using the Care Transitions Initiative. So what does that mean? So for about 300 patients, that's about $750,000. Are you going to invest that much to move the needle? $20,000, $50,000, that's the big question. So I'm way out of time, but the takeaway is critics are correct. Safety net hospitals are penalized more than others under this program, but when you sort of recontextualize things and think about these add-on payments, they get the IME and DSH payments, it's a little bit of a different story. Hospitals already have fixed costs. It's like flying an airplane. They're just going to fill more seats. So losing out on additional revenue when you avoid readmissions is probably problematic for them. They get a lot of additional revenue each readmission they have. So I leave it to you to see what you think of all of this. But I think there's not a lot of incentive for hospitals to change under this program. That's all. Any questions?
I have a question. I'm from Maryland. We're an all-payer state.
Right.
And our community benefits plan, I think, is supposed to take out about $300 million from hospitals. So there's a major look at readmission rates. That's what we're doing. So there's pressure on the hospitals to do this. Also, what gets reviewed gets measured gets done. As another principle. And third, I just looked up the total hospital payments in the United States, and it's close to $1 trillion. It's about $800 billion. So $100 million is not enough. $28 is not enough to really move the needle to even make an administrator do more than shrug your shoulders. But I think these other factors, and the fact that just looking at readmission rates, talking about them, and looking at the preventable ones, I think that I used to stay health commissioner in Maryland. So I'm interested in these kinds of issues that I used to work out associated with Medicare and Medicaid. So I think the fact that we're measuring, we're looking at, we're questioning these, and we're trying to change the whole payment structure is significant. But I do appreciate the balancing factors. And if I'm a hospital administrator, I could get away with not doing anything, not Maryland, but I could get away with not doing very much, not being penalized.
Right.
If there's a disincentive, if I'm going to lose my DSH payments, but I'm balanced. I think this is good national policy.
Well, so points well taken. I mean, I think we look to Maryland often for, you know, that you have an interesting program there, and I think there has been some discussion recently of making some changes because there were some thoughts that there was some overspending there. But I think Maryland is a great test case for sort of innovations in payment policy. I think that from a hospital administrative perspective, I would agree that $400 million seems like small potatoes. On the other hand, there's been a tremendous uproar about the program. I mean, the HA and advocates are really upset about it. I mean, I've worked on the hospital wage index, a more technical issue where you can have changes that will affect you know, 10 cents per discharge, and people will go to war over these things. So what I will say is this, you know, let's say the average hospital payment penalty under this program is $165,000. That's every year. So you got to think about it in sort of long term. I don't know how hospital administrators balance long versus short term, but if you're thinking on a 10-year scale, now you're talking some money, you know, $1.1 million. Question is, in the investment, $200, $300 per discharge, how many people are you actually targeting? Like, are you targeting just those that come in the applicable condition? Is that really 300? Is it, you know, do you kind of have to target it more broadly? Are those costs sort of sunk at a certain point? Are they mostly labor costs that you have to renew each year? I'm not sure how an administrator, if they charge an accountant or someone like me to build the business case, exactly how it would come out. But I think if you're talking $1.1 million, you got to think about it. Like, even if you have no penalty this year, you have to sort of think about from an economics perspective, you're still avoiding $165,000 or $250,000 every year. So maybe you should invest something in it. I guess that's one way to look at it. Obviously, given my presentation, I tend to think a little more like you, that this is small peanuts. If you want to change things, you might want to have a heftier penalty, but maybe not penalize 70% of hospitals, which was what we're currently doing. I think the fact that going up one readmission or down one readmission without some sort of confidence intervals in the way that the method works is a little bit unjust. So, yeah. Sure.
You estimated that for 250 applicable admissions, a one readmission change could. So, is that the typical size for number of applicable admissions?
Yeah. So if you look at
that small.
Yeah. So if you look at the impact file data, the readmissions data on Medicare's website, you know, there's a lot of variation, obviously, but the average number of Medicare bill discharges per year is about 3,000. And you usually have about, so when they created HRRP, they created the high volume, high cost conditions, but they weren't necessarily the top 10 high volume conditions, but they represent on average about 10% in the data of all Medicare discharges. So you're talking heart failure, AMI, pneumonia, and then the last 2 years they've added COPD and hip and knee arthroplasty. So that's about 300 applicable condition initial discharge. It's actually not quite right. It's 300 for those plus readmissions, so it'd be about 250 plus 50 if you have a 20% readmission rate. So it's about 250 initial applicable condition discharges. So moving that, you got to think about it. If you had 50 initial discharges, if you get rid of one, that changes your readmission rate by about that 0.2% I was talking about, which moves the adjustment factor to the same level that was the top quartile of all performing hospitals in the data. So it's pretty spectacular when you think about it. Yeah.
So this one follow-up.
Yeah.
So one point that you're making is that Medicare's leverage on this issue is pretty small. Has there been any movement in the private sector to follow Medicare and also penalize hospitals for
not that I know of. I mean, I know other systems like UnitedHealthcare have their own hospital readmission measure. The state of Florida uses potentially preventable readmissions developed by 3M, this proprietary algorithm, which is actually a lot better, I think. But it's very costly, so Medicare's not about to use it. The biggest movement, as I say, has been the expert panel from the National Quality Forum and the Impact Act, which is to either sink the ship completely, or I think the ship has sailed, but now they're trying to change the risk adjustment methodology. They're going to include socioeconomic status factors in the adjustment. So a paper just came out in JAMA Internal Medicine showing that it actually scooped my research, so I'm very upset, but showing that if you adjust for factors, you reduce the variation across hospitals of the same type. So the big movement right now is to just sort of, you know, actually not make the penalty harder, but make it less hard for some hospitals. Yep.
So I might have some sort of perspective.
Sure, please.
California. And what we have seen is that from 2011 to 2014 in our hospital discharge data, we saw a reduction in readmissions overall statewide on unadjusted,
right.
From really down from 14%
right.
to about 13.6%,
right.
Which results in about 25,000 readmissions a year for all adult populations.
Sure.
Which, you know, to me, is the sort of the benefit of the CMS program.
Right.
Is that it's only reducing it for the Medicare population.
Oh, is there a spillover? Yeah. So I should see the stage and we can do more questions there. I'll just briefly respond to that. So there has been a national reduction as well, now in California data, about one percentage point, which is, you know, data that we should be optimistic about that. However, I think there are some data out there from NPEC and others that might have something to do with increasing observation stays and other things, plus the thing that I mentioned in an earlier slide, which is they've increased the number of planned readmissions. So now, originally there was a lot of complaints like, hey, you're going to penalize us for someone coming with heart failure, comes back for chemotherapy or something, right? So they've now excluded more and more. So some of that, I haven't studied it. I'd like to get into the nitty gritty, like with this, of how much that would move the needle on that. But I think there's some concern and also how things are being coded, actually, that might be moving some of that. But I think we all share the optimism that this is probably a good thing. So I agree. Yeah. Thank you.